All right, so this is part two. You were talking about the delegations coming in and the roads being blocked off.
And so finally everybody's in, and they say Mrs. Marbark is almost here. And of course the two people were not in was John Kerry. And I still can't remember his name, who was the official negotiator.
Yeah.
And so finally they said, the Secret Service said, no way. You know, this is it. Is it? And of course they had the two spaces at the head table.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so my job was to go fill the head table, because you can't have a head table with two empty spots in it.
So you sat there?
No, I had to fill the head table with the two proper people who could go there. And thank goodness, Ambassador Robin Duke, you've heard of her? Well, she was at the second head table.
Okay.
And she and her husband. So I said, okay, they go to the head table. And then Mrs. Mubarak came in properly, you know, everybody stood up, did all the right things, she got to the head table. And then John Kerry comes running in.
Oh, no.
And I said, wait. And there they are, the two of them, like, you know, they're 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
And I said, you can't go. And they said, what do you mean I can't go? I said, I'm sorry, it's too late. You can't go to the head table. They said, what? And I said, sorry. And then I had the Secret Service help to
escort
them to the second head table.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, this is all protocol.
Yeah.
You know, you do not do anything against protocol. So after they get seated at the second head table, they went over to the head table. I was ready to kill them. Because the Secret Service are watching me because I'm organizing the meeting. They said, you can't do that. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
So that was the best story of the whole thing. It's like my telling John Kerry, he can't go to the head table to see Mrs. Mubarak and to be part of the head table. And I'm sure he probably won't remember that. But now it's very funny to think of the position that he's in.
Yeah, it's really a big fun. Deal.
It was a big deal. Yeah. So that was Cairo. We made so many advances at Cairo. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is because the women's groups learned to advocate. Mm-hmm. We actually had advocacy sessions we had a core group of about 30 women from Asia and Africa and Latin America, mm-hmm. who we trained on advocacy so they could go back to their own countries, mm-hmm. work with their delegations, mm-hmm. on the platforms, mm-hmm. come back and prepare them for various votes.
Yeah.
And the big votes that were taken in Cairo were about abortion.
Oh, wow.
All of it. The reason why the Cairo agenda was hung up and, you know, they had to take many, many votes was about abortion. And about putting in abortion language and not putting in abortion, mm-hmm. language. And finally they reached a good compromise. Mm-hmm. And then that carried forward to Beijing. Beijing wasn't nearly as interesting because it was just so big. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they had it consciously separated. The official meeting, which of course was in the Beijing, mm-hmm. Conference Center, from the NGO center, which was in Cairo. And so they made a specific point of not putting the NGOs together. So that the NGOs had to run back and forth. Those who had official passes, which were not very many. Uh-huh. So it was a very different scene than Egypt. But, you know, Hillary, you know, making her speech at the women's, at the NGO, mm-hmm. conference was the big highlight, and that made a huge difference, mm-hmm. to the conference itself and to women's rights, you know. Mm-hmm. But it just wasn't nearly as fun, because it was also much, much larger. I mean, there were hundreds of thousands of people there.
Yeah.
And frankly, only the Chinese could have organized. They had buses going back and forth Cairo the whole time, and it was very, very well organized. Wow. But it was intentionally to keep them away from the professional delegation.
Right.
Whereas Egypt was really designed to actually do the mm-hmm. thing. And the other part of Egypt that was so much fun was that, and this is how the government works, right? They basically desperately needed a women's and girls project in Egypt.
Uh-huh.
Because, after all, how could they be the U.S. delegation, you know, advocating for women's and girls' rights if they didn't have a project in Egypt? So that was my job, to come up with a project in Egypt. And usually, you know, when you're designing a project, it takes months, mm-hmm. years, and, you know, going through the channels to get everything approved. Well, my project got approved in 2 months, and then it was going to be signed at the Cairo conference by the vice president.
Wow.
Because they needed to have the star project on girls and women. And it was a very interesting project. So I lived in Cairo for literally 2 months to write the project, get it all approved. And so the vice president was going to sign the project. Mm-hmm. And of course, that was the conference that he missed because he broke his ankle. So then it was signed by the USAID administrator. I can't remember his name right now. Mm-hmm. I have a picture of him. Brian Atwood. So he was a substitute for the vice president. So that was sort of a little disappointing. But that project was a great project and still continues today.
Oh,
it was really one of the best projects that the USAID has ever funded because it was really about, you know, it was just about family planning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order to have successful family planning projects, you have to have young girls and, mm-hmm. and young women who are educated.
Right.
And so it was really, it was in Upper Egypt, which is, of course, one of the most poverty-stricken, you know, areas. It was about literacy for girls so that they could really learn the basics, not only about reading and writing, but how to take care of their families. So
mm-hmm.
a lot of practical skills.
Mm-hmm.
And so that became really one of the best projects for the best ways of preparing, you know, young women and girls to then become mothers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really very successful.
Yeah.
That's all the things I've ever done.
Okay, perfect. Well, let's bring it to today. You, at the beginning of the interview, you mentioned that the abortion rights rhetoric right now mm-hmm. today is possibly more divisive than you've ever seen.
Yeah.
And could you give me some reasons for why you think that, or just like in your experience of having seen the ebbs and flows of the movement?
Well, unfortunately, mainly because it's been a completely politicized issue now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it hadn't been, I think that it had been a quieter issue, people would have been able to make their choices in the comforts of their own home and with mm-hmm. their own doctors, and it wouldn't have been a highly visible political issue. But because it has become, people have had to take public stands. Oh, which side are you on?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just brought out a lot more discussion, controversy, and I think there are many, many people in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many people who would make decisions about if they had their own daughters or their own, you know, who would make a decision one way, who may do that secretly anyhow. You know, probably the worst politicians are the ones who, if their daughters perhaps were raped or victims of incest or need an abortion, they probably would do it. But from a political standpoint, they can't because, you know, their voters would not,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I think that's really one of the big problems is the fact that it has become such a central political issue that campaigns are won or lost on the basis of their views.
Mm-hmm.
And in that sense that if, you know, we need to overcome it politically and
mm-hmm.
use all the mechanisms politically, but also, you know, people need to be able to articulate, you know, and be able to still make their own choices known.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard at this point to think about what's the right answer to sort of depoliticize or to make more progress in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, if Congress can't, you know, decide to, you know, to reduce the debt spending or to, you know, come to such a standstill over the budget, you know, what can they do? I mean, Congress obviously can't make any decisions at this point. So to have this decision in their hands is just is sort of a no-winner at this point.
Mm.
So I think we're at a very strange time in our history.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows really what will happen and mm-hmm. what's the best way. But I think the only way that we can make progress on this issue is for families themselves to be able to, you know, to speak and to speak if they have to speak to their Congress people, but to certainly take matters into their own hands
mm-hmm.
and be able to, you know, the biggest threat, of course, is, you know, with the anti-choice who really wants to take away Roe,
mm-hmm.
which we don't think will happen, but on a state level to take away, you know, the you know, to put in place all the restrictions. And that's got to be fought on a state-by-state basis. Mm. I think we're lucky, I guess, in Rhode Island that there haven't been major restrictions. But in North Carolina right now, there are huge restrictions, you know, to women, young women, having access to any kind of services, including family planning, even mind abortion services. So it's got to be done. It's got to be fought on a statewide basis, and it's got to be fought with young people who are sensitized and understand what the meaning of this is, and that it isn't a right that will always be there.
Yeah.
So young people really have to understand, just like we understood in our generation, that if we didn't do something about it, we wouldn't be able to, you know, make the decisions. You know, so we can't take it, young people, we cannot, nobody can take it for granted at this point, because there are many, many forces that would take away this right. And so I think that the key message is you got to get out and you continue to fight for it. Get your friends, male and female, and families to understand what this really means.
Well, that's all the questions I have. Did you have anything else you wanted to add to the oral history? All right, well, thank you so much.
Okay.